You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
David, give me the microphone.
Must I?
Look, I spent all that time up in a spaceship with aliens, and you will not give me the microphone back. This is my show.
Yes.
Behave yourself.
Yes.
Oh, we're live.
Okay. Oh.
Hello,
okay.
Everybody. Welcome to the Stone Tapes. And we're here today with Patricia H. Ash.
Hello.
David J. Howe. You can
Hello.
Say it a bit louder than that. Our wonderful producer, Alex Levchuk, and of course me, Sam Stone. And boy, have we got a bit of a show for you today, because as you heard just then, we're into a bit of a Tears for Fears mode. What did you think of that track, guys?
I like it.
Everyone wants to rule the world, David?
Well, you certainly do.
You certainly want
I can think of worse dictators. Absolutely.
Ruling the world would not be bad.
Sam Stone ruling the world, that would be great.
Well, I do have plans, you know, at home for world domination.
Everyone would be forced to wear corsets and stuff like that. That'd be great.
Patricia.
We could all shatten her up. Sorry.
What's happening in your corner this week?
Well, in my corner, I've been reading Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Wow.
This is one of those books where I saw a movie trailer and went, ooh, I want to read the book that's based on because that looks really cool. And I'm not sure exactly what I expected from this book based on the movie trailer, but it's not what I got. And what I got was better.
Right. Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. There's this guy named Jake, and when his grandfather dies, his grandfather used to tell him all kinds of crazy stories about when he was a kid, and he was at this place, and there were all these strange children, and he had all these weird photographs, and then there were these scary monsters, and so, you know, Jake, being a normal kid, goes, oh, well, actually, he's not very normal, but we get to that later. He's kind of peculiar. But when Jake's grandfather dies, Jake sees the monsters.
Oh, wow.
So, his grandfather was writing, telling him stories about.
Right. So all of those stories that his grandfather told him are absolutely real.
Right.
So, of course, everybody who's normal thinks he's absolutely crazy. So, yeah. Poor Jake. He goes to, he gets sent to a psychiatrist, and all sorts of things happen. But he's decides to try and find the place that his grandfather talked about with basically Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children is what he's looking for. And eventually that's what he finds on a small island in Wales in a time loop.
Yes.
Accessed through a Stone Age barrow.
A Stone Age barrow. So that's different from the film, because I've seen the film.
Yes, we've seen the film, yes.
I have seen the film. I'm sure it wasn't a barrow.
No, it was a cave, I thought.
It was a cave. Well,
it was something like a cave, yeah. But supposedly it was the burial place of a bog dude.
Oh, you know, like right. Bog man. Okay. So that explains it a lot better then, because in the film they never actually cover that, so...
Okay, that must be one of the things they cut out for the film. I haven't seen the film, I've just read this book.
Is the book aimed at children, or is it aimed at adults?
Young adults. It is, if you look for it in a library, it's going to be in the young adults section. The protagonist is like 16, 17 or something.
Right.
And, well, the peculiar children are technically like 80, but they're also still children because weird time loop.
Yes.
Weird time.
Yes, but in terms of the writing style and so on, it's absolutely accessible for adults as well.
Oh,
and
gosh,
everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, the main difference between adult fiction and young adult fiction is that the protagonist is probably going to be slightly younger.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, the young adult fiction is better than the adult fiction.
Mm.
I'm not sure why.
And they usually don't have any sexual content either, do they? It's deemed unsuitable for younger readers.
Well, they can have angst and relationships and stuff.
It depends a lot on the genre, but usually more fantasy ones. Like, this is more of a fantasy, not really sci-fi, even though there's time manipulation. It's not exactly a magic thing. I mean, it's basically superheroes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The peculiar children all have what we would think of as superpowers.
Right.
And one of the really cool things about this book, let me show you, is these vintage photographs.
This is good radio.
Oh, wow.
Let me show you these vintage photographs on the radio here.
Oh, gosh, that's brilliant.
So they've like mocked up.
Yeah, no, these are actual vintage photographs that the author
genuine.
Looks like there's two. There's one little girl stood by a lake, but shadow is showing two little girls, just for the sake of our listener.
Yeah,
and unusual pictures. Hard to describe all of them, actually, but it might be worth popping down to your local bookstore and having a look at
this particular edition is the Quirk paperback edition that has all of these. I don't know if they're in all editions. So.
I found it in an airport. There's an interview with the author in the back of this particular edition, which is how I learned about the photos. that are wonderful. Actual vintage photographs that he just found and made a story about.
Or that might, of course, just be the conceit for the book, of course, that they are actually recreated, but they're...
They look so real.
Yeah. Well, people are clever. There's even black...
There's some originals from the film.
Ah, this is from the film.
And you can tell from just the stills that they've changed around the peculiar children a little bit.
Peculiar animals.
And there are some... photos that he had but he couldn't use, and some show up, and apparently there are more books.
That's actually a very lovely edition. We'll have to look through that.
I might actually have to buy
that
now.
What would you give it as an out of 10 then?
Ooh, 9 out of 10.
Wow,
that's good.
9 out of 10.
And what's it called?
Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. There aren't many books with a title similar to that.
No.
By Ransom Riggs.
And actually,
it's even a cool name, is it?
It's got I don't know if it's his real name.
Lemony Snicket's about it, perhaps.
I know Lemony Snicket is not his real name.
Not his real name, no.
Well, I'd say that if you get a chance to definitely check out the movie as well, because the movie I thought was really good. It doesn't sound very different from the book. I'm sure there's lots missing because the books are always better than the movie. But yeah, if you get a chance, I'd definitely give it a try because I really enjoyed it when I saw it. was brilliant. Shout, Tears for Fears.
I like a bit of a shout.
I like a good shout.
I like a good shout. Yes.
Well, I've been thinking, what have you guys been watching on TV recently? Because I've been watching some really interesting series on downloading sites are available as we have to say.
Amazon Prime
for example,
and others. Anyway, so what have you been watching, Sam?
I've been watching a series called Salem, and I forget how many episodes I'm in, but we're still on the first season.
About six or seven,
and it's very interesting. What do you think of it, David?
I'm really enjoying it. I think it's really, really good. I mean, we've actually got the theme music here, so take it away, Alex.
And a thing I like about Salem is it had a concept when I saw the previews or commercials for this series, and I thought, is this going to be The Crucible all over again? And it actually is nothing like it whatsoever, and in fact none of the characters are even the same, or even the same names that I'm aware of. There might be a few names like Mercy and what was that other woman called in The Crucible? I do forget. But
Abigail?
Yes, Abigail. There's no Abigail, but there's a Mary Sibley, and I think she's kind of the role that Abigail was initially.
She's a historical person.
That's right, and they don't use any of these names, except perhaps the Witchfinder General might be one of them. I'm not quite sure. What's your thoughts on the series and how it's progressing at the moment, David?
As I said, I'm really enjoying it. I mean, what I like about it is that, yes, it's individual episodes. Yes, it's an ongoing story. But each episode actually progresses the story. Something new happens, a new character comes in. There is actually plot development, which I really am enjoying that about it. The basic idea, it's all set in Salem, which, as people probably know, is a small American town where witches were back in the whatever century it was.
1600s.
And so it's all about Salem and the witches that live there.
Is it about the witch trials? Yish.
What it's actually about is Mary Sibley is actually the lead witch. She's the witch that's in charge of everything. But nobody else knows that, except for her coven, who are also in Salem. And so what they're doing is they are actually trying to gain control of the whole of Salem by weeding out all those who are against the witches and put the witches completely in control and in charge.
Whoa.
So that's basically what's going on.
It's kind of a reverse The Crucible in a way, because it's kind of the witches have the power, although they're still fighting against the Puritans. There is a Tituba in there, which is also in the Crucible, the handmaiden.
But what I particularly like about it is that the witchcraft is real, in a sense. That, for example, there's a graveyard, an open graveyard outside the town where all the dead bodies are just tipped into this, into between trees and stuff, all the dead bodies. So when they go out there, there's all rotting bodies and flies, and it's absolutely disgusting.
It's not for the faint-hearted.
And it's not for the faint-hearted at all. And one part, they go out there because, is it Mary or one of the others can actually speak through a dead person's face? So they go there to find the person, take his face off, string it up on a thing and talk to it, and it actually speaks back. So you actually get this real witchcraft going on. Mary's also got her husband bespelled by putting literally a frog in his throat, so he cannot move or speak or do anything or speak out against her.
Someone did a bunch of research.
So he's completely controlling her. In a later episode, he gets a tarantula spider goes into his throat and webs his spider. You have to go with the flow. But there's a lot of elements of this witchcraft in it, and it is quite strong and brutal. And the basic story is that there's a captain, John Alden, who's arrived in the town, who is trying to work out what's going on. He's an ex-beau of Mary Sibley, and she still has feelings for him. So this whole plot is unravelling. There's also a bunch of young girls who are kind of wannabe witches who don't quite know what they're getting themselves into, and that's all unravelling.
And they seem to be more evil than the actual main witch, to be honest.
And as the series progresses...
Well, if you look at the historical Salem witch trials.
Yeah. And as the series progresses, so a real witch hunter arrives. What's his name?
I've forgotten his name. I had it before and it's gone.
Does it start with H?
He he's a reverend something.
No. It's a very strange name.
Puritans, they're
it's
very
gone,
strange.
So I've lost it. Yeah. But he arrives and he is trying to now uncover what's going on, and Mary is desperate not to be uncovered.
But he's really evil.
He's really evil.
He actually gets off on torturing the witches to the point of, I know, it was actually, I was closing. And I can write the most gruesome stuff and read the most gruesome stuff and actually watch some terrible, very dark things, but the torture scene of Tituba was just too much for me. Actually.
But you can tell just from that very brief outline, there's an incredible amount going on, and all of that keeps developing each episode. There has not been a single episode where you've watched it and gone, well, A, I don't know what's happening, B, nothing happened in that episode, I'm bored, I'm not going to watch another one. It's really, really good. The theme music we just heard there by Marilyn Manson. So you can't go, kind of get much more cool than
that.
Can't go wrong with that. And it's brilliant. I absolutely love it.
So it's extremely bingeable.
Yes.
It is bingeable.
Very bingeable.
Definitely.
I'm going to have a witchy binge now.
A witchy binge. So that's we've been really enjoying that, haven't we?
Yeah,
haven't
absolutely.
We, Sam?
And other things we've been watching for a long time now was Orphan Black.
I was going to say, could we come back to that one after the next track, perhaps? Because
perhaps,
let's talk a little bit about American Gods, because we touched upon that when we were talking between music. We've also been watching American Gods, which I think is up to about. And we watched it all.
Eight,
we finished.
I think it was
eight, nine episodes or something.
Episodes, and that was finished.
And that was finished.
It ended for that for this battle anyway. This season,
I found that a bit disappointing. I found that a little bit, you didn't really know what was happening. And I think if you hadn't read the book, you really would have been a bit lost.
As I didn't. I've never read the book, and I have no clue what's going on.
Quite a lot of the episodes. To its credit, it is the most beautifully shot and acted and directed series.
The opening credits are brilliant.
The opening credits are brilliant. It's got tremendous production values. But I think they were probably playing it a little bit too close to their chest and a bit little, you know, we've got to feed this out a little bit. A little bit like that in the book.
You read the book, of
course. Yeah, I've read the book. I haven't seen the series yet. But in the book, Shadow doesn't know what's actually going on until very close to the end.
And that is very like the series. And indeed, Shadow and the audience don't know what's going on until very close to the end. And I think that may be the thing that kind of tainted it a bit for me. Because as the audience, I feel as though I'd like to know what's happening. I'd like to know what I'm watching, why I'm watching it, who these people are, why they're doing what they are doing.
Mr. Wednesday does not want you to know what's happening.
He does not want you
He's
to know.
He's pulling a con.
He is. He is. He's very good, though. Ian McShane is
very good.
Brilliant.
He's very good in
Mr.
it.
Wednesday. Utterly brilliant. As there I said, are, the casting is superb. Performances are brilliant.
Yeah,
production values are brilliant. Really, really good. Slightly disappointed to get to the end of the 8 episodes and to find, really, it hasn't even really started yet.
That is a difficult thing. That's a difficult it's thing difficult. When you're watching a series, because you're expected to invest in it. And if you still can't see where it's going, it's really difficult, which leads me straight to Twin Peaks.
Well, we're going to go to some music now, I think, and then we've got some more chat coming up.
No, let's quickly talk about it. So, with that Orphan Black music...
That was Orphan Black.
We will digress to that and come back to Twin Peaks in a few moments.
Yes.
Orphan Black. What do we think of Orphan Black?
It's been on my to-watch list for some time, and I still haven't gotten to it. I'm very bad at procrastinating.
I think we're now in 5 seasons, and I felt... talking about the very first season, it was just mind-blowingly good. And I know you'll love it, Patricia, if you get to see it. It's such great. I think it's finished on season 5. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but the ending of this season...
Is it still on Netflix?
It's all on Netflix.
Oh, okay,
all
good.
Of it's there now.
Oh,
and
good.
It was amazing.
So I can have a massive binge-a-thon.
You can. And it's worth it. What's your thoughts about Orphan Black and the way it's progressed, David? Anything?
I really, again, it's another series I really enjoyed. I thought season 1 was probably the best thing that I saw that year. I don't know which year that was. Probably 5 years ago, wasn't it? But assuming they're doing it season a year, I don't
know.
But I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It was original. It was startling. The lead actress, Tatiana Maslany, is a revelation. I mean, we said we didn't know where she'd come from, what she'd done. We immediately looked up everything she'd done.
She's
so good. The basic premise of the series is that Tatiana plays a woman who sees what appears to be her double at a railway line, and her double steps in front of the train. And she goes over, she's left her bag on the thing, so she goes over to see what's going on, picks up her bag, and takes over her identity.
Because she's one of these sort of slightly ropey characters anyway.
Yeah,
and she saw
and
an
she
opportunity,
sees money
she took
and
it.
Whatever, and I'll take that, and blah, blah, blah. And then what it transpires is it's basically all about clones. But Tatiana Maslany plays every single clone, and there's about 6-7 of them regularly, who all appear in shots together and in scenes together, interacting together all the way through.
It's just
amazing. And it's all her. And it's brilliant.
Absolutely amazing.
It's utterly brilliant. But as a thriller series, it's exceptionally good. I did feel it lost its way a little bit. Season three is
always dodgy with everything you watched, to be honest.
But season five was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, and I think you've enjoyed it as well, haven't you, Sam?
I really love it. I think, again, the performances are fabulous, not just by Tatiana, but by supporting roles like Gavaris.
Jordan Gavaris.
Who is her brother in this, her adopted brother. Mm. He is a fantastic role, very, very entertaining, mm-hmm. very good actor. The woman who plays Mrs. S, I don't know her name off the top of my head, but she's a great Irish actress, very, very good. And the series, to me, I think if they finish it now, which is what I think it has finished on at the end of season five, because it was all wrapped up very neatly.
It was the right place to
do it. It was the right place to do it. It really was. So sometimes they go on two seasons too long sometimes, and you...
Or they force it, you know, and it's...
Yeah. I think they saw that it was a natural ending, and they did that, and it was great. And in comparison to that, Twin Peaks, to me, was a complete disaster. Or is a complete disaster. I think we've watched about 10 episodes of it now, and I'm 12, still not sure what on earth is going on.
I'm really not sure about the new Twin Peaks. Now, the original Twin Peaks series, was it 20 years ago?
25 years ago, I believe.
Wow.
At least, you know, it was said.
I mean, that was pretty awesome at the time, and it was pretty groundbreaking at the time. We have rewatched it, and it does stand up.
Yes.
It does drag a little bit as it gets towards
They dragged it on too long. It
went on a bit too long, but the first 12, 15 episodes are some of the best television that's ever been made. Utterly brilliant. New Twin Peaks, though, I'm just really, really not sure.
Well, let's summarise what's good about it first. McLachlan, fantastic.
Carl McLachlan is brilliant.
His performances as Bob, because he plays two roles in it, and a sort of reincarnation of Agent Cooper that is slightly, what's the diplomatic word to say of this? He's very special. And he's actually...
Special means.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant in these roles, absolutely superb, to the point where sometimes it almost doesn't matter that there's no plot going on, because when he's on,
it's very watchable. It's very watchable.
There are other characters in there that I think are also very good, but some of them just seem like they're just cameos. They've been brought back from the other series, and we're just going to throw in a scene with these. Weird things happen, like a little boy gets run over by a truck, and the truck driver doesn't stop. It's just random.
It doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything.
And you don't hear... It just happens. And then about three episodes later, you get this...
Suddenly the character in the truck is back again.
And he goes to see this woman in a cottage. And says, oh, if you tell anybody about this, I'm going to kill you. And then he does kill her. And then you go, what?
What was that about?
It
was just so random.
Exactly.
There's so many random things in it that... David Lynch himself gives a very good performance in his character.
It's a real dichotomous series. There's a good word. On the one hand, it's very brave. It's got stuff in it, like an entire episode given over to being mostly in black and white and revisiting the Holocaust, which is kind of a bit strange.
Sort of
and what's
well,
that
actually.
Got to do with anything? It's a little bit Rocky Horror-esque, that episode as well, with this people in a castle watching the bomb coming off and taking something out of their brain in order to travel to Earth to become a small bug
that
then crawls into somebody's mouth. And what has this got to do with anything?
This has become the Twilight Zone?
You can't really categorize it, Patricia. It's, as I said, on the one hand, it's very brave. On the one hand, it's very different. On the other hand, it is absolutely frustrating because nothing is explained. Nothing is resolved. You know, only David Lynch could spend 5 minutes in a bar where it's a single shot of a guy sweeping the floor.
Yeah. For what? And every episode ends with singers on a stage.
On a stage, singing a song.
What is the point?
It has nothing. Just apparently, has nothing to do.
It's just all random.
With anything, it's a very, very strange and challenging series.
It's disappointing because I really wanted to see another thriller come out of it.
I wanted to see a thriller. I wanted to have, if you like, more of the strangeness around what they started to develop about Bob and the Black Lodge and the midgets and giants and obtuseness of this alternate reality that seemed to be going alongside and in parallel with our reality. And, you know, for all I know, that actually is exactly what's happening. And that what he's done here is he's taken a great big magnifying glass, held it up to real life, and said, well, your lives are not explained. You don't know who that person on the bus was that came
We're
up to you and said, could you look after my crisp packet? You know, was he a nutter or was he an alien or was he somebody else? You know, lives are not explained. You know, reality doesn't explain itself. You just drift through it and try and make sense of what's going on. And that's exactly what this series feels like. But as Sam said, on the converse, there are some great and brilliant performances. Dana Ashbrook is brilliant.
It's very good.
Loving the police element and the policeman who, to be honest, is the only thread that makes sense to me.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because they're trying
FBI
to investigate what's happened to Dale Cooper.
Yeah.
Why is he not around? What's going on?
It's the only thing
that
links
mean?
It all.
It's sort of like linking it. So it's a very, very strange series.
It is very strange.
Okay.
Well, I can't let this little section go without mentioning The Handmaid's Tale, which is a series that I've been watching through Sky. I don't know what channel, which channel it's on, but I think it's 10 episodes altogether. And it seems to come to a conclusion then, in very much like the film did with Natasha Richardson. Oh, it's Channel 4, I've just been told by our producer. Thank you, Alex. And actually, this was a very well done series, except for the fact that sometimes I did want it to just get a move on. Because what they've done here is they've spread this whole story out over 10 episodes. And is it 11 episodes? I stand corrected. And according to IMDb, it does look as though there's going to be season two. Although I can't see, having seen the last episode, where that's going to go. And I don't want to do too many spoilers, but if you saw the film with Natasha Richardson many years ago, this was a great film. I did enjoy it. And I have read the book. Margaret Atwood is the writer. And it's a good story, a bit of a dystopian future, if you like, where we take a step backwards and men take over the world again and put women back in the kitchen and the bedroom where they apparently belong. They're not even allowed to read. Can you imagine that? You're not allowed to read. Not allowed to write or read. And they're only allowed to do things like, you know, flower arranging or a bit of painting.
I guess I could knit.
They're allowed to be cooks, and everybody's given a designated title. So the handmaid herself is actually one of the few fertile women left, and they're forced, if you like, into service of the commanders and their wives who can't have children, and they're put into these awful sexually degrading ceremonies in order to get pregnant. And their children are then taken off them. So it's quite a horrible, horrific tale. But there are also some moments of triumph. And there were some good performances in there. The lead actress was, she's called Elizabeth Moss. Very good. I did wonder about the choice of her, because I wasn't sure about her at all at first. But she grew on me. And there was the woman who was the commander's wife was Yvonne Saranovsky, is that her name? Strovsky. She was in Chuck.
Oh,
and
Chuck.
She was also in Dexter, this girl. I remember her from that. And she was great in it. Very different role for her, because she was quite disempowered. But the lead male being Joseph Fiennes, who was awesome in it, actually. Mm. Very, very good. And there were some great roles and a great commentary on a bit what we're sort of living with at the moment, with Mr. Trump being in charge. You kind of feel like this could really easily go that way, given half a chance. So that was The Handmaid's Tale, and we're going to move on to Sowing the Seeds of Love, still on our Tears for Fears theme.
Zig on your feet, some mud on your shoes. The Midweek Drive on Siren FM 107.3.
Are you there? Are you there? Are you there?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
This is who we are.
Coffee House Hermits from Lincoln, England. We're all travellers in space and time.
With strange characters.
And it's the one with the nose.
I absolutely love her.
And surprises galore.
A free concert. Think of it as being sung to by Elvis Presley.
Unusual discussion topics.
Why would you want to give every child a water pistol? It was a bit like choosing between kittens and babies.
That will make your ribs soul.
You have really done your homework.
That's what we call show business.
Join the Midweek Drive team every Wednesday from 5 till 7 on Siren FM 107.3.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
And now for a new Stone Tapes feature, anniversaries.
Anniversaries. This is brilliant. This is so we're going to have a cast our mind back in time. We're going to travel back a little bit. So the first anniversary that we've got this month, 150 years ago, on the 25th of August, Michael Faraday died. Now, if it wasn't for Mr. Faraday, we probably wouldn't be talking to you now. Because, of course, he invented electricity, electromagnetic induction, it says here, dismagnetism, and electrolysis. All sorts of fun things Mr. Michael Faraday invented. Including perhaps the Faraday cage, which in Doctor Who terms, of course, stops ghosts from the past on undersea water bases from coming to attack you. So we have to
also
remember
does
that.
It's got a lot of uses. But
it
boy,
does do
handy.
Things with electricity. That's
yeah,
handy.
It's handy to have one of those.
That's right. So really brilliant. And so 150 years ago, that was that one. So that was a good one. Okay, let's step forward in time. Let's leap into our time machine. I should have TARDIS noises for this. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
And 125 years ago, so this was the 4th of August in 1892, Columbus sailed. No, he didn't. This was... the father and stepmother of Lizzie Borden were found murdered at their home. And as we all know, what was it? Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave
him
father 40 whacks.
Was it mother 40 whacks and then gave her father 40
more.
Is that right?
Go on.
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Ah.
Hey, there you go.
Or possibly it was mother and father. I don't know. She killed them both. But was acquitted somehow.
He's counting.
Isn't it amazing that it was 125 years ago, and yet we still kind of remember it, despite the fact...
It's a catchy rhyme.
But despite the fact that, as far as I can remember, there haven't been any modern films, or TV shows, or books, or even comic strips, although if George was here, we'd probably go, no, one came out last week, that actually... do the story of Lizzie Borden.
There is. I saw a film a few years ago, or it might have been a series, with Elizabeth Montgomery, who was also in...
Off of Bewitched.
She was in Bewitched, and she was, I think she... Yes, that's right, Bewitched was the one. And she was Lizzie.
Was she?
I remember seeing that.
Because I know there were really, really early black and white, early films, silent films, about Lizzie Borden and the legend and stuff like that. But I find it fascinating that, it says here, the story has been recounted in numerous books, films, TV stories, plays, songs, and a popular skipping rhyme, which is probably what you said. But I would struggle to name a single one of those.
Well,
we're missing out, obviously.
It's also featured in a lot of true crime, because the case was so sensationalized and famous at the time that it kind of, it's still there. And if you look at any book about, like, the history of the murder in the United States, Lizzie Borden is going to be in it.
It's amazing, isn't it? I think that's amazing.
A female axe murderer is really unusual.
Oh, that's cool. Mm. That's really cool. Mm. And the last one I've got here is, and this one surprised me, 20 years ago, on the 29th of August, 1997, Netflix began operating as an online DVD rental service.
That really surprises me, because I thought it had been around for like...
It says it switched to a subscription-based service in 1999 and later added unlimited video streaming and original programming. Wow. So Netflix has been around for 20 years.
I had no idea it had been around so long.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Wow.
Well, it's no wonder it's very efficient then. Now it's time for David's Film of the Month.
And the Film of the Month, this month, as you might have guessed perhaps from us playing Mad World by Mad World, by Tears for Fears, is Donnie Darko. Now, this is a fascinating film, 2001, science fiction film, I suppose it is science fiction, written and directed by a chap called Richard Kelly, and starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Drew Barrymore, Catherine Ross, Patrick Swayze, of all people, and Maggie Gyllenhaal. It's kind of a slightly obscure film in terms of people say, oh, it doesn't make sense, I don't get it. But actually, it's a very clever film. It's got some tremendous performances in it. Donnie Darko himself is played by Jake Gyllenhaal, and he's playing, basically, it's a teenager who nobody understands, who, to be honest, is mentally disturbed. He has severe problems. He's seeing a psychiatrist. He's really not a well boy. He has a friend who's an imaginary giant rabbit. But this rabbit is kind of telling him things that about the future and says the world's going to end.
And about people as well.
And about people and all sorts of things. So he sees this giant rabbit called Frank, who tells him the world will end in 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes and 12 seconds. And the film basically then charts what happens in that period to Donnie, his ups and downs and problems, and it's not particularly nice life he's got. It's not particularly pleasant. He leaves the house, and while he's out of the house, bizarrely, an aeroplane engine crashes through this house and destroys his bedroom. And when he comes back to the house, he finds the house destroyed and his parents not knowing what's going on, etc., etc. And I'm going to give spoilers because I don't think there's any point because it's an old film here and people should go and watch it. The film basically then builds to the point where Donnie's girlfriend, or the girl that he really likes, actually dies. She dies quite nastily, and it's very, very sad. And what Donnie realises is that if he had died in his bedroom, he would never have met her and she would still be alive. And so that's basically what happens. The engine that fell off the aeroplane actually fell off in the future and fell through a time vortex to hit the house in the past. And so Donnie makes sure he's in the room. When it comes to the point of the engine falling off the plane, he dies and everybody else survives and lives
on. Like the world writes itself. Because
the world writes itself. It's a very sad film.
It is very sad.
It's very poignant. It's very unpleasant in many respects, but it's very, very well made and very, very enjoyable. And I think once you get that time travel element, that that's actually what's going on here, it all makes sense. It's a very, very good film. I mean, definitely 9 out of 10, I think, as a film to watch. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Patricia, you said you'd seen it.
It's been a long time. I did not do my homework this month. And I remember thinking it was a very strange film. I don't think I quite understood exactly what was going on, so I only
give it quite obtuse.
7.5 out of 10.
Because when the engine falls off the aeroplane, of course the aeroplane crashes. And there's a whole load of little girls and a dance troupe and people from the school are all on the plane. So they all die, but then they were going to die anyway. Uh-huh. And we were talking about it last night, Sam and I. And there's this whole kind of subtext that unfortunately people who suffer from depression get is like, the world would be a better place if I wasn't here.
I understand that.
It's really kind of dark, because
that's
not
true. That's the feeling you get, is that he feels...
he feels that,
that everything that's gone wrong in the world is his fault.
It's his fault
and technically
somehow.
It has, but it's kind of like visualised onto the movie. I think it's... Having watched this again, I agree with you, on a previous watch, I was a little, not so sure, but I think having watched it again this time, I would give it a good, strong 8.75, because it was actually a lot more accessible this time. I think it's one of those films you have to watch it a few times to really sort of appreciate.
Okay.
And I think probably because
so
once you've seen the end, once you've seen the end, you kind of like the things that happen earlier all start to make a lot more
sense.
It comes together. It reminded me a lot. I saw a film called Butterfly Effect, which I think we need to cover at some point as well, which is also superb. And I think that's all we've got time for. But before we go, we have to say a huge thank you to Patricia, because she is sadly leaving us as appearing live in the studio.
Yeah, I'll be a phone-in next time.
Oh, we'll still be on.
That's why I didn't do my homework.
But she's
been so busy.
But she's still going to be a correspondent. And we look forward to speaking to you again, but we are going to miss you.
I'm going to miss you guys so much.
I think we need to give Patricia a round of applause for her brilliant work that she's done over the whole of the time that the show's been running. You've been with us, and so we are going to really miss you.
Bless you.
I really miss you guys too.
And thanks again to David J. Howe.
I've been here.
Alex Lefchuk, our producer, and of course Patricia. Thanks, gang. Till next time.